Let's continue where we stopped. So, now our Linux is running, and you know, we were able to install all of these whatever things that we want to have there, like, you know, display manage, desktop environment, whatever you want your Arch Linux to be. Exactly these things that you have in mind when you think about, this is my Linux, you install it, you get it up and running, you're done. Then some things remain, which is like the meat of the technical part of the presentation. This is like how Arch Linux works under the hood, or things that you actually should know about, details that matter. These are things that are a little different from other distributions, or at least they can be. There's 4 points, systemd and system control. That's kind of like standard in most of the Linux distributions nowadays anyway. Then we have Pacman, which is Arch only. We have the Arch repositories, and specifically we have the Arch user repository, which is so important that I have a separate point for it. We're going to look through all of them. So the first one is systemd. Systemd is your init process. And system control is this for your systemd. That is your mission control center. There is where you see everything that your systemd does. Right? That means you're in that room, and you, once you start system control, you have that capabilities over systemd. What is a system init process? For all of you who haven't heard that yet, it's the first process that is started in user space, which is kind of starting everything that you are interacting with. That means the shell that you are dropped into is started by systemd. So this is something that exists in all Linux distributions, and it's most likely a systemd with whatever distribution you use at the moment. That also means whatever you start is started by systemd actually. It's a child of systemd. And system control is that one thing that you can use for starting, restarting, stopping, enabling or disabling any service. What does enable or disable mean? If you enable a service, it's going to be auto-started, and disabling is not going to be auto-started again next time. we're going to see an example for this. You can also reboot, suspend, hibernate power of your system using systemd, and inherently that means using system control. This is, by the way, also the recommended version of doing it. And obviously systemd and specifically system control can do way more, so there is a manual entry where you can also look it up. So let's look at some details here. What might system control look like here? Do I have a mouse pointer? Yes, I have a mouse pointer. So I kind of just type system control status, and I get that list of things that's running. So there's, like, you know, some general info and some processes, services that run here. So let's just scroll down a little. I see that there is some fish shell running. I see that there is some UDEV running. I see that there is a conman running. Conman is my network manager. A journal daemon is running. I see that there is some, yeah, that's pretty nice, time sync daemon, etc. So there is some things running, but not too many. As you see, like, there is not too much stuff here. Yeah, maybe pointing out this one, WPA supplicant. So that's obviously a computer with Wi-Fi, because this is your Wi-Fi WPA supplicant service. these things are running on Arch Linux without any graphical user interface started. So this is when I log into my Arch before I start any display server. No X server running, no desktop environment, nothing. It's not much. Check out the size of the scroll bar here. It's small. Now we go to the next one. This is when I start my graphical user interface. Yeah, that's more, right? So kind of scroll down again. It's the same computer. Now I see there is some Dunst running. Dunst is, who knows Dunst? Yeah, okay, some, okay. So you want to have these super ugly pop-ups from the 80s, from your, you know, whatever mail you get. This is a server that runs that stuff for you and makes these bubbles, and you can actually make them look really nice, like from the 2000s and 80s instead of the 1980s. You have Pulse Audio running here. That means the laptop has, it's my laptop here, it has some audio. We have, what else is there to point out? The GPG agent, so encrypted mails. We have the bus. We have, like, you know, my shell. There is some StartX running. This is cool. So this is how I start my X server. So this script is, you know, running. We have X init here. We have X.org. We have that Intel backlight. So someone is adjusting the brightness of the laptop screen. We have an i3 window manager. We have Compton, which is handling transparency. We have Redshift, which protects my eyes because I'm super much of a night owl. And when I code at 4 in the morning, then my screen shouldn't be blue but red. So that stuff is running too. I have Firefox, Thunderbird, yeah, all of these user programs. Then we have, yeah, Discord, whatever, you know, all these things. Conman, so my network manager seems to be Conman. I have a radio technology toolkit running. WPA supplicant is running, you know, all of these things. So you see, that is all running in your init process. And you can all start, restart, stop, enable, and disable that stuff as you wish. Let's look at some examples. So, as I just said, starting, restarting, enabling, disabling, when would you want to do that? Let's, for example, say you have different network managers because you want to try out, I don't know, Conman. Someone recommended that's a cool network manager. You only want to have one service handling your network, right? So you install that new thing and say, I disable the old one and I enable the new one. And you can do that on the fly. The next time you start, your network is going to be handled by the other service. That's everything that you need to do. And it's only one command away. It's like system control enable something or system control disable something. Yeah, same works with restart. Same also here, like without a service, if you just want to reboot, it's really just system control suspend or reboot or power off or, you know, whatever you want to put there. Whoop. Yeah, that's pretty, I don't have more examples for system control actually, so that's a short thing. The second, a little bigger thing is Pac-Man. So you inherently need to know about system control and system D because, you know, this is just how you enable and disable services in Arch. It's super easy, nothing more than that. Same thing is for Pac-Man. You really can't go around Pac-Man. Pac-Man is, yeah, we all know Pac-Man, right? I mean, I don't need to say anything to this Pac-Man, but maybe to this one. Pac-Man is the package manager of your distribution, in that case, Arch Linux. So what is a package manager? Yeah, it's this one software bit that manages your software on that computer. That means installation, uninstallation, management, etc. And your software in Linux is in almost all cases organized in packages. So whenever you install software, you actually install a package. Keep this in mind. Everything is like packed, like in a big warehouse. And Pac-Man just happens to be the package manager of Arch Linux. So that's everything there is to it. Pac-Man specifically is a very powerful and easy to use package manager. Easy to use, there is only, like, you know, one drawback, it's command line. That's the only drawback that you have, but it's very easy to use on the command line. So don't be afraid of using something on the command line because it is as easy as the commands that you're going to see now. And you can't go around Pac-Man. If you use Arch Linux, you will use Pac-Man and you only need to know a handful of things with it. But these are important. If you ask Arch Linux users why do they use Arch Linux, you're prone to hear, because Pac-Man, because super full repositories, because no dist upgrades, and because the thing just runs like a charm for many years, right? So Pac-Man is definitely going to be there. And why is Pac-Man so awesome? Because funnily enough, it's just really good at doing its job, managing packages. Nothing more, nothing else. But it does it in a way that you can easily do stuff. And it doesn't lose files. That's also nice. So the Pacman basics. Maybe you spot the command in between all the comments. It's the white one. These comments are here because they're important. So if you kind of look up the slides afterwards, all of it is in the manual anyway. But I want you to remember these things, or like at least be able to easily look it up. The one thing that you need to do is the system updates. And system updates are done using Pacman. Why? Because your system consists of packages. That means if you update the system, all that it really does is update each individual package. If all packages are up to date, your system is up to date. This is the equivalent of each other, right? There is no system update and then package update. No, that's the one thing. It's just a package update that exists here. And the recommendation is to do it with this command. In the documentation, you will find the same thing without the double YY, which is just a safety measure that I put here too. So even if your Pacman might have a corrupted database, this one is probably gonna fix it, so to say. So network bandwidth doesn't matter too much nowadays. You can just use this one. It's gonna be fine. So now we're gonna see a warning showing up multiple times. It's a second comment block. It says never call something with Pacman with minus S or minus SY before directly before calling that SYYU, because this can break your Arch system. We're gonna see details about it, but it's inherently one of the things that can break stuff. This is why it's written in all caps. Don't do that. You find tons of reports of people that did it. And they got themselves a live USB stick afterwards to fix the system. Okay, so this is one of the things that you need to know. It's a design decision that it's this way, because it gives you lots of power. So some Pacman basics. We now know how we update the system. This is one command. We do that like regularly. I can actually show you something here. If you look to the top, you will see that there is Arch 11 updates available. Right? This is that I know, this is my reminder that there is some packages that want to be updated. And I think I got that like 2 hours ago, because Arch delivers updates pretty straight. We're gonna see that also on the slides. It's really quick. You get updates multiple times a day, and you can do an update once a day, and it's fine. Okay, so we know how to update Arch. How do we install new software? Yeah, this is the minus S thing. Minus S is install that latest version of the package from the repositories. Inherently means an installation is the same as an update, if you think about it this way. You get the latest version. If you didn't have the latest version before, you just get the latest version. If you had zero version before, you just get the latest version. And this is the command that you should never call without calling minus S YYU before. How do we uninstall a package? It's another command. So there is the one version here that says minus R. Actually, it's better to use the lower version, because the lower version doesn't only install this one package, it also uninstalls any other package that that one package depends on and which is not used anymore by anything else. So this is kind of like clearing your system. It's kind of like, you know, keeping it clean. And Arch doesn't lose stuff. Pacman is pretty good at tracking things. So you can easily install, uninstall, install, uninstall, install, uninstall 10 times in different times in different configurations, and it's gonna work. In the background, Arch downloads the packages into the Pacman cache, which is here in var cache Pacman package, and it's a design decision that it doesn't automatically remove stuff from there. That inherently means at some point you're gonna start some disk scanning thing, because you think like, why am I running out of disk space? And it's gonna show you, yeah, your package is multiple gigabytes big. And this is done because of speedup. In any cases of reinstallations, etc., the package is already there. If you want to get rid of these versions, there is a pack cache command with minus r, which just removes everything from there except for the latest three versions. That usually means from multiple gigabytes down to less than 1 gigabyte. You can also modify it to, for example, clear everything. You usually just want to stick with the standard. And I mean, I need to do that once a year, maybe. Really just do that when I need it. It's not a standard thing. What else can we do with Pacman? Just quickly pointing out things so that you have an idea of what the package manager could be used for. You don't need a graphical user interface for it. Keep that in mind. You can do that on any server without actually opening up any Googler stuff. You could, for example, say, I want to search the database for a certain package that contains a search term. So I know that there should be some Inkscape, right? I want to search for it. Blah, 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 minus SS, search term, Inkscape. And I get the list of the packages that include Inkscape or have to do something with Inkscape. I can search for packages that are already installed with a different option here, also with a search term. I could also say I want to have info about a specific package. So there is a name, but I don't know what is in it. Is it the right package? I can get that info directly on the command line. I can get it from a Pacman database or from the packages that are already installed on your system. I could also say I actually want to know which files are installed because of this package. I go for the package name, I see all the files that are installed. Pacman tracks everything. This is also the reason if you kind of do everything through Pacman, your system is never gonna be full of any files that Pacman doesn't know about. Every file that you have there is inherently tracked by Pacman. That's also why you should never install anything by hand. Use Pacman for it. We're going to see that in a moment too. Sometimes we want to know what is the dependencies of a package. I want to install, I don't know, Firefox, and I want to say, I want to see which packages that does Firefox depend on. And I have the pack tree and the Firefox there. I see all the packages that Firefox depends on. I could also say, there is that one package on my computer and I want to know which other packages use it as a dependency. And I can do the same thing reverse. I can ask for show me all the packages that need this package. It means if I remove the package, all these other packages are going to be broken. Yeah. And then I could, for example, also say list all the packages that are not required by any other package as a dependency. And I can do the same thing for packages that are explicitly installed, which are not used by anything else, which, think about it, which usually is a good list of what you really used on your computer. If I want to go to some other computer and do a clean install there, I might want to use this command to get a list of things that I seem to have installed by hand that is not required by anything else. You could also just get a list of things that you installed by hand, which is probably super long. But usually this gives a good idea. 90% of the software that you use might show up there. Firefox is not going to be the dependency of anything else usually, right? So you're going to see Firefox there. Yeah, one more thing. you could, for example, also say, I have that super weird file in my file system. Why is that there? And then you can actually search for which package created that file in the first place. So this is all stuff that has been implemented in Pacman because people use it. Which inherently means, if you want more of any of that stuff, that means you want to do something with your system. Keep in mind that Pacman is managing all of that stuff, all the packages, pretty much all of the files, because they are the result of installing some software. All of these things exist. Whatever you need is most likely already there. Go to the manual, quickly check it out. There is super likely a switch for exactly the thing that you need. This makes Pacman so powerful. Okay. So now to that one thing that I mentioned before. Why is it so important to update the system with minus SYYU before using minus S for or minus SU for installing or dealing with any individual packages? And this is the word of warning because this is how you can break your Arch system. It's a design decision. Why? Because Arch is rolling release. This is the one bit that you need to know about. It's a powerful thing and it also introduces potential drawbacks. So rolling release means that the packages that are in the Arch repositories, which we're going to see in a minute, they are updated whenever there is an upstream update. Upstream update means the developers of the original software, they kind of push an update to, you know, their GitHub page. The project is in a new version there. Usually there is one Arch developer that monitors that repository and gets a mail notification that says there is a new version. That guy is usually going to update within maybe a day or a couple of days. It's going to fetch that thing, update the package that is built for Arch, and put it into the repositories. So an upstream update, in a simplified version now, ends up in the Arch repositories extremely quickly. This is not depending on any release number or, you know, distro upgrade or so. These things are always, more or less always, the latest version. More or less, just to have that said, Arch also has some testing, obviously. So they test stuff, so it is going to take a little bit. If it's a super important thing, it's not going to be pushed to the Arch repositories because this has huge potential to break stuff. They do some testing. So it's not like an auto-fetch or so that they do. But it's very quick, so you will see updates within one day a lot. And that also means something that you can think about. It also means that inherently there is only the current system of these packages available. That means whenever you install something, you get the latest version because that's most likely already in the Arch repositories, which is one of the biggest advantages of Arch Linux, in my opinion. You never run out of updated software. and now to also have said that, technically you would be able to install lower versions of any software, which inherently uses that minus S alone. Usually a very bad idea. If you know what you're doing, yes, you can do that. I mean, this is why it exists. But if you don't know exactly what you're doing, please don't do that, okay? Just stick to the latest version. Yes. The question was, that would mean that there is Python 2 and Python 3 in the Arch repositories. This is correct. So the version of Arch Linux for Python, just to use that example, is that Python, the standard Python in Arch is Python 3, not Python 2. They like changed it a couple of years ago already. And if you need Python 2, you can install that via the Python 2 package. And these things exist in parallel. Yeah. And there is no downgrade because in that case both exist in parallel. But you would technically be able to downgrade any package too to a lower version. If you know a newer version introduced a critical bug for you, you can decrease exactly the package. But as I said, be careful about it. There is a downgrading section that has a very big red flag and a warning that says, be sure that you know what you do. This can break Arch. It's a design decision. Okay, so rolling release, we always have latest packages. Yeah, this is why we don't have the dist upgrade thing here. And this also means this is why after an update of all packages, the Arch is in the latest version. And now the point about this is that when I update a system like this, and it's always in the latest version, the design decision that Arch did is exactly this one. Partial updates are not supported. Partial updates mean that some packages are on the latest version and the rest of the system or other packages are not on the latest version. So that the packages that you have on your computer, some of them are on the latest version in the repositories and others are not. The reason for this being unsupported is easy. Testing all possible combinations is extremely much work. This would really depend. This would kind of like be way too much for Arch, for the Arch guys to test. So they really just test the latest version of all packages that they work together. How would we end up with the partial update? We would just use minus S alone to update an individual package or a group of packages and not the rest of the system. Some packages are on the latest version then, the others are not. And this bold and all caps, this can break Arch. And now I have an example here where there is warnings on top and bottom, don't do that stuff. You have the reasons for why you want to do that here. That's a broken system that you get by doing that. Bash and Firefox both depend on the readline package. Readline does exactly what the name says. It reads lines. So it's super basic. Bash, as you probably know, is one of the most important things that you have in a Linux system. If Bash doesn't work, you are in trouble. Firefox is your choice of browser. Oh, nice. So some user decides to update Firefox without running the whole update thing. Firefox depends on readline. The moment I update Firefox with minus S, Firefox is going to get updated and all its dependencies get updated too. If you are unlucky, there is a new version of readline in the repositories too. So Firefox gets updated, readline gets updated. The bash does not get updated because it's just, you know, not a dependency of Firefox. So your bash becomes incompatible to readline. The next time you start a bash, it crashes. You don't recognize that. You reboot. Yeah, guess what? Your login shell is broken, right? That means you can't boot anymore. You are not even dropped into a shell to fix that stuff. This is the moment where you go to archlinux.org. You don't rant, but you read. You find out what you did. You get yourself a bootable USB stick. You update the whole system. Done. And this is not a joke. The correct usage is here and here. And examples of broken systems is here and here. And tons more on Reddit. And they all suggest, please add a warning for bash and readline, because this is inherently what happens. People update the Firefox and break the bash. So the simple thing for all of this, I mean, I pointed out because I want you to know, the simple thing for all of this is just always do an update. I mean, if you do minus S, you have internet anyway. It's not going to take ages. Whenever you touch Pac-Man and update something, run an update before. The update recommendation, there is something else beside that that is important to know about. The update recommendation by the Arch team is, before you update, you should actually check the Arch Linux news, which is here under that link. And it means that sometimes the system doesn't work perfectly. So sometimes some mistake has been made by package maintainers and they need you to change something. That means we see here on the top line that there has been something that requires manual intervention. Manual intervention means you need to execute most likely one command in your command line additionally to running an update. And this happened like in June, in July, in May, in April, in February, you know, not very often, but it happens. If you don't do that, things still likely don't break yet. That means if you don't do that stuff and you execute it, Pac-Man is going to say, I can't do stuff, aborts, you see an error, you Google that error, you find exactly the page, you see manual intervention, you execute the command, done, fine. However, there is one drawback for this. If you don't update your Arch regularly, that means more than, you know, a month or so, you might get multiple of these things in the same run. And multiple manual interventions have a high tendency to break Pac-Man. Okay, so I mean this works. When you didn't update your Arch in a longer run, then you definitely need to check the Arch Linux news page. This is why the recommendation by the developers, which want to make it safe for you, is just check that thing all the time. I update it daily, I never check it, I didn't run into any problems. But I run into these things like, manual intervention, Google, copy paste, update again, done. Okay, but that's my version, right? I mean, I'm not afraid of setting up new if I really break my Arch by being dumb and not following the RTFM. Okay, so one more thing to go. The Arch repositories. So this is where you get the packages from. It's pretty full and it really looks like this. Or not, maybe, I don't know. It's all packages. So we have multiple of them. We have core, extra, community, multi-lib testing, and, which I'm going to highlight individually, the Arch user repository. For all of them, the configuration of which are used is in this one file here, /etc/pacman/conf. And it's all in the manual. That means how you enable or disable these things. So for example, the top three are enabled by default. The others are disabled by default for good reasons. And it's all in the manual, even why it got so complicated in the first place. So if you ask yourself, why do we have all these things? Yeah, it's there. To give it a quick shot, Core contains all these packages that you really need for each system. That means boot, network, package building, etc. These are made by the Arch guys themselves. Extra contains all these packages that you need because they're super important, but you can't, they're a little optional already. You know, Xorg server. You don't need that for a server. Your window managers, browsers, etc. They are also maintained by the Arch team. Then you have the community repository, which is other important packages that don't really fit into the first two. And these are not maintained by the Arch guys anymore, but by trusted Arch users. And then we have, for example, the multilib repository, which is disabled by default, would give you the possibility to run 32-bit software onto your inherently 64-bit Arch Linux. It's usually disabled because, you know, you don't really need it except for if you want to do some specific things or gaming. And that, as far as I know, is also maintained by the Arch guys. And then there is the big market, right? I mean, you probably recognize the difference to the warehouse before. So this is your Arch user repository. It's pretty clean, by the way, so don't get it wrong. It's just you have a very big variety of things there. This is one of the big strengths of Arch. Everything's available. Arch user repository is one thing that you're going to hear from Arch users, why they like Arch so much. So it's like an endless market for software, pretty much everything they could ever imagine. It has an own section in the manual. And what does it now mean when I say it's immensely big? There is two ways of seeing that. In my perspective, the first one, that repository is user managed. Everyone can contribute something to it. It's pretty easy to kind of get something there, push it there. It is not that you have to maintain it on your own servers then. And Arch Linux users like exotic stuff. So the Arch user repository is inherently bigger than any other repository of any other distro, as far as I'm aware of. Now, if anyone looks up that number, it's like 53,000 packages by November this year. Anyone who is like a Debian admin might now say, oh, well, wait a moment, we have like 60,000 packages in the repositories. Yeah, that's because Debian splits like one thing over 10 packages. Arch also does that. It splits it maybe to three, not more. Right? So the variety of things that you have in the Arch user repository is bigger than anything that I would be aware of here. And I mean, the bigger this all links, there's like people discussing these things, etc. My personal point of view is like, after 1 year of usage of Arch in research and development, there was one thing that I didn't find in the Arch user repository. One thing, and I really played around a lot. That one thing was this here. The device driver and processing software for this bit of research software. Okay, so I mean, I really got the hang. Yeah, there's pretty much everything there because this is really rare. Without having that link on the bottom that says it's a pupil device, you might not even easily find it on Google. So this I had to do something about. Everything else was there. That means all of that stuff was there. My Android SDK was there, you know, my Skype, Signal, WhatsApp, okay, I don't know if you use WhatsApp, Wire, Telegram, Slack, whatever you want. I mean, all these things, they are there. What does that mean for you? Everyone who installs these things on a different distro from an installer that you download from the homepage of the guys who implement that, you are not getting automatic updates. In the Arch user repository, you get automatic updates. I mean, that for everyone who said like, no, yeah, that depends on how the software is implemented, right? There is no repository that is automatically updated, or these things outdate. Yeah, technically all of that, by the way, could also outdate, just that you know. It's maintained by users if they don't, you know, care for it. It could technically be that you also have outdated software in the Arch user repository. It happened to me, I think, once. And I tried lots of these things, so that's possible, but pretty rare. So my personal finding was, this is gladly way better than with many of the other distros that I tried. Because this is just really straightforward. You don't have to take care of so many things. So now I'm gonna give you one example, then we're done, about how can you actually do something like installing stuff from the Arch user repository yourself. There is inherently three steps to that. Means at first you at some point need to read the manual about it because you want to have an idea of how that is done. It's easy, but it's better that you read it yourself. Then you need to install that base development package group, which is giving you all the tools that you need for installing stuff from there. You also need that once. And then the third thing that you need to do once is you create your build directory, which the suggestion for which the suggestion is to use in home just the directory called build or builds. Yeah, then if you want to install a package from there, it's just these three steps. You find what you want to have in the Arch user repository, which you can do through the website. There are other ways too, but the website is like the one that I'm going to use now. Then you acquire the build files, which is a git clone command. That already gives you the idea now. Yeah, the Arch user repository is actually a collection of super many Git repositories. Each package there is in the Git repository. Once you have that files, you use make package to install it on your system. So, practical example. We want to search for Git Discord. I just, you know, randomly typed in something that's like that awesome messenger for all the guys who want to game. So everyone who has used Discord, probably you don't know that there seems to be a beautiful Discord or a beautiful Discord minus Git. Minus Git in the Arch user repository means it's the bleeding edge development version. So it's all there. You can also get better Discord or better Discord Git or better Discord around and see whatever that is or Blisscord or Deadbeef plugin Discord. So you get the idea, right? Arch users like exotic stuff. It's all there. The version that I needed is just the normal one, which is marked here on the on this line. So it's just like, you know, here. If I click on it, I get some info that says what are the dependencies, where it's required, and it gives me that clone URL for that repository. That's what I need. I clone that repository. So I go into my builds file, I clone the repository, I change into it, and then I see, okay, with ls we have some Discord desktop, Discord install, Discord shell script, license, package build, etc. Now, as we're going to see in a moment again, the Arch team recommends to check these files. Why? Because it's user managed. Anyone would be able to submit any type of malware, right? The whole community would see it because it's public, it's in the system, right? It's tracked. However, if no one checks it, then no one will recognize it, right? So the recommendation is to take a look at these things. That means in my case, last star, I check everything here. If it's binary files, that is going to be funny. But I check it. Okay, once I've checked and I see like that doesn't look super malicious, I can use this one command to install it. That's it. Make package. Yes, please. So the question is, do I seriously use less and star? No, I just made it up for the presentation, honestly. So this is just because I don't want to have all these commands here. Please don't execute less on binary files because it is going to make your screen look funny. Okay, so yeah. Okay, did it answer the question? Yeah, okay. So make package builds the package, and these switches here, the minus SIC, minus S installs all the dependencies that you need using pacman from the original repository, so not from the Arch user repository. Okay, minus E installs the package should the build be successful. And an option that I add, if you look into the manual, the C is missing usually. The C means you clean up the repository after the installation. This is the decision that I do because I personally care a little more for my disk space than for the speed. usually this repository is not automatically cleaned because any reinstall is gonna be quicker. Okay, so my decision is use -c, yours can be don't use -c. These repositories can get somewhat big, that means gigabytes, if you have big things that you install. Okay, make package is very powerful. I'm saving you all of the details here. As with Pacman, make package can do very many things. So if you have something in mind, check out the manual. There is a high chance that whatever you're looking for has been implemented. Now the question is, why do we use make package in the first place? Think about it this way. Make package does exactly what the name says. It creates a package. So whatever you get from your Git repository is usually gonna be relatively close to what the original source of that software in that upstream repository is. Plus some package build file, which is a script that says, how can we create a package out of this? And that package that we create is managed by Pacman. That means everything that is coming from the Arch user repository is managed by Pacman in your system. That means there is not a single file, even from the Arch user repository, on your system that is not tracked by Pacman. You can easily install, uninstall in any way everything from the Arch user repository and kick it out again, and you're not gonna fill up your system with random or garbage or lost files. This is why the system stays clean for years. This is also why, again, you should not do anything outside of the package management system. So the question that you might have is like, yeah, but what do I do if my package is not in the Arch user repository? Yeah, possibly you don't need it. Because Arch users like exotic stuff. So it might be, I bumped into that case a couple of times myself. It might be that there is a better drop-in replacement for what you want to do, which is in the Arch user repository. It could also be that I'm just using old software or that I'm, you know, solving the wrong problem. So usually it might be a good idea to go to the Arch user repository and search for whatever you want to solve. Maybe there is a better thing to solve that problem for you. And if you end up in that case, is it okay if we take the question afterwards? Thank you. If you really end up in a situation where your package is the one that you need, and it is not in the Arch user repository, like with that research prototype before. I mean, there is no way around the device drivers. Then instead of just adding these file systems to the files to the file system by hand, you can very well create your own make package. And you could, for example, do that by getting any dev installer or so, get the files from there, and quickly write a small package build script file, we're gonna see that in a moment, which specifies what goes where in the file system. If you do that, everything again is tracked, and it means it's an easy uninstall. You're not gonna fill up your files even with these things, your file system with these things. Nothing is gonna be lost. How easy is that? I honestly have to say I didn't do that myself yet in this way, but it looks a little like this. This is TechsLife, it's a tech distribution, and there is a Gantt chart plugin for it, which I needed, and I know that this is just like one style file. So if I scroll down here, you see that there is some description, there is some, for example, this is interesting, there is a depending line that says, for being able to use the TechsLife Gantt thing, you need these two packages too, they need to be installed. And when you scroll down, you see what the actual package is. It is just, we create a file on the file system that you have, which is tracked, and we copy that style file, which is the content of the package, into that location. That's everything that's done. And you can easily create a thing like this. The point is, if you do something like this because you think that this is useful, it might be useful to others too, so you can push exactly that stuff to the Arch user repository then. And this is why you have like close to 60,000 packages there. And other people are gonna search for it and use it. And they're gonna vote, and if you get sufficient votes, it's gonna be copied into the official user repositories and the official Arch repositories. Okay, so there's only like a couple of statements before we are closing for today. You could use something like Arch user repository helpers. The recommendation from the Arch team is to not use any of them. So Arch and the Arch user repository have been designed in a way that you're easily able to do all of this, as I've shown you, without using them. That means clone repositories use make package. There is nothing more to that. That's super easy. You just need to know that this exists. Having said that, there is two things that you can do with Arch, with our helpers, that help us. That is, the ones that are more or less okay, and these are usually those that don't interact with Pacman directly. That means you search for a package and automatically download it, or you download it and build it. Building the package is not a Pacman thing. You just create the package. The moment where you install it, you use Pacman. So all of these things are okay because, you know, no Pacman interaction. Problematic are those that interact with Pacman. So anything that wraps a Pacman, which is then called, I mean, makes sense anyway, it is called a Pacman wrapper, like, for example, Yaourt, or any graphical tools for Pacman. So they also wrap Pacman because you can install and, you know, uninstall stuff. And the problem is that these tend to use unsafe flags. I've linked that here. So actually Arch, they do the effort of pointing out for each of these tools what the exact flag is that tool uses, which can break your Arch system. So that is not there because they're funny, but they can point out this tool can break it this way, this tool can break it that way. And that has the red banner and like a warning so that you're careful. So my recommendation is don't use them. Some are okay, some are not. The maintenance of your Arch repositories. Would anyone probably close? Thank you. The maintenance that you have to do with your Arch user repository packages. In the end, you have lots of Git repositories in your build file, in your build directory. That means if you want to update them, you just fetch all of them. All that got an update, you merge, and then you kind of rebuild the package and install it. That's it. And you can easily install, uninstall any of them with Pacman again. So it's the same thing, whatever you want to try, try it. If it doesn't work, remove it again. Nothing remains on your system. And another thing, as I said before, keep in mind that it's not managed by the Arch team, but by users. That means no guarantee for stability or integrity. It could be that there is malware that you want to, you know, find out by looking at these files yourself. And it could also be that technically things could break because they don't work together. That means some software doesn't work with some other bit of software. It's possible, not very likely. I haven't seen that myself, but I mean, this is how the system works. So myself, I can just say, in the end, I didn't run into a single issue with 1 year of usage, and I did a lot of stuff using the R. Okay, so you made it. Takeaways. Remember these 3 points that I showed in the beginning? In the break, I heard from people that some of you feel like you could, you were able to connect to that story in the beginning, like, you know, my story of Linux, or maybe your story of Linux. This is exactly why we're here today. So if you feel like Arch Linux could be something that you want to try, power up your VirtualBox or, you know, VMware player and try it. Give it a shot. Once it's running, I'm pretty sure you will like it. So the takeaways for doing that is, takeaway one, Arch is not difficult. Yeah, Arch requires some knowledge, but it teaches you. It's all in the manual. You're not gonna fail. I mean, if you fail, you just redo that step, and that's it. The second takeaway. It's all in the manual, right? I mean, there is nothing that is not there. If it's not there, you might not need it. Check if you're solving the wrong problem. That means read up upon it, learn from it. You're gonna save so much time and nerves in the future. It is gonna pay off. Yes, you need to invest once. When you install it the first time, it's probably going to take half a day for you, or a day. And you will have so much more knowledge that you're going to use afterwards. This is going to save you much time in the following years. And I guarantee you this one. It's going to save you much time in the following years. I didn't believe it myself, and I found out. And the third one is Arch in the end runs like a charm. So it doesn't have any dist upgrades. It is a rolling release system. That means in the end it's pretty easy system maintenance. It has up-to-date software. And with the Arch user repository, you have access to lots of things that you might need in your development life. So concluding from my own experiences here, in the end, for me, it did save lots of nerves and time. And I did some learning and I had to invest in the beginning, but it paid off. So I hope that if you try it yourself and use it for a while, maybe you feel a little like I did. I, in the end, wished that I would have used Arch years ago. But it took me some people to tell me, which inherently is the reason why I'm here today for you. Okay? So that's it, guys. Thanks, and now I'm ready to take your questions.